Hey, I'm Jeffrey Masters, and this is LGBTQ&A. Now, I love today's interview with Gigi Raven Wilbur because when it comes to the many different identities that make up the LGBTQ community, I think we often talk about them as separate individual experiences. You're one or the other, right? You're gay or you're bi, as just one example. But for the vast majority of people, we tick off multiple boxes. Take Gigi Raven Wilbur, for example, today's guest. They are bisexual, they're intersex, they're non-binary, they're polyamorous, they practice and teach BDSM, they're kinda everything, right? And proudly so. That kind of overlapping of identities, that is becoming more and more common in the community, and I secretly think it probably always has been. And then I think you likely know this, but for those who don't, intersex people are born with sex characteristics, that's genitals, gonads, chromosome patterns, that don't fit the typical binary notions that we think about when we think about male or female bodies. And these are natural variations in the body, we should say. So I talked with Gigi about learning that they were intersex in college, discovering BDSM and how that has transformed their life. And we also talk about how they're feeling right now living in Texas with all the legislation that's being passed and proposed in that state, specifically targeting trans and gender nonconforming people. So all of that is coming up today. And without further ado, this is LGBTQ&A with Gigi Raven Wilbur. I want to go back to when you were 23 and you learned for the first time that you were intersex. What was going on then, and how did you learn that?
I had just started college, and I took a human sexuality class. And when they covered intersex conditions, I went down the checklist. Yep, that's me, that's me, that's me. And I realized, oh, holy cow, I must have been born intersex, and nobody told me.
So learning that, like, what was going through your head? Like, how did that feel to discover?
It kind of felt like a relief, because I remember it was a few years before that I came across the word androgynous, and that just resonated with me. You know, I thought, wow, that's what I am. And then when I learned about intersex, that hit even closer and resonated at a deeper level, and I realized, oh, okay, that's why I'm so different.
Describe, like, what you mean by different. Like, how would you have described that back then?
I knew I didn't fit in as a boy, and I didn't ever feel like I was a real boy. I identified real closely with, I think it was Pinocchio, and I thought, I'm not a real boy. And it just felt so good to figure out finally, oh, this is who and what I am.
I mean, there's so many, like, misconceptions around being intersex that, like, something is, like, wrong with the body or needs to be fixed. Those are not true, just for people listening. However, at that time, like, learning this for yourself, like, did you worry that it meant something was, like, quote unquote, wrong with you?
I didn't feel like anything was wrong with me. I thought something was wrong with the medical community because they did these surgeries on me, and I still have a little bit of scarring. And I thought, you know, this, it just felt like they were playing God with my body, trying to create this illusion of making me a sex that I'm not.
And these surgeries, you were like hours old, days old, right?
Yeah, when I was an infant.
Did your parents, like, give them permission?
I don't know. My father was a minister, and they never talked about things like that. And my mother was very, kind of one of those holy rollers. She was into speaking in tongues and all that stuff. I think the other thing is that, you know, once I got caught playing with doctor with boys and girls, and my parents were in shock and said, you're never supposed to do that. I mean, I was probably about 12 or 13, and it wasn't until many years later that I came out as bisexual And that's when my family pretty much disowned me.
Did they ever come around, or was that like more or less permanent?
It was pretty much permanent. I was always kind of the black sheep of the family anyway. And I was a dyslexic ADHD kid.
I believe at one point your like father brought a bishop over to perform an exorcism.
Yeah. He called it a house blessing. He spent about an hour blessing my bedroom and about 10 minutes for the rest of the house.
Wow.
And then he put his hands on me, on my head, and cast out demons. And he said, "Be gone, evil spirits. And I bless you. And from this point on, you are a sacred being."
Did you like judge this part of yourself? Like, did a part of you like want that like blessing to work?
Nah. Actually, afterwards, that night, I went up in my bedroom and masturbated.
Wow. And so this was done, I guess, in response, was it to like your like femininity as like, or like your bisexuality? Like, what would your father have said?
I think it was more in response to being so dyslexic and ADHD.
Oh.
And also not being masculine.
It was everything.
Yeah.
Wait. Let's go back for a second. After I called it an exorcism, the house blessing. You said you went upstairs and masturbated. What
kind
was that impulse?
I never believed sex was a sin. And the church always put it out as a sinful thing. And even now, today, I think, well, the Creator created my body. It's a sexual body. And am I going to slap the Creator in the face and say, oh, I'm not going to use the gift you've given me? Or am I going to embrace it and say, oh, sex is a sacred act? And I think that's part of what was, it wasn't in those words back then, but that's how I felt.
I mean, so one thing I want to talk to you about was like, you know, your work in the BDSM community, but it sounds like even before you found that, like, sex has been a very important part of your life.
Oh, yeah. Growing up, I was very curious about sex, and I read all I could about orgasms and before I could even have an orgasm. And I was a late bloomer. I didn't reach puberty till about almost 17, and that's characteristic of intersex. We're late bloomers. But I still liked the tingly feelings I got down there. And so masturbation for me wasn't about reaching an orgasm. It was about feeling that good, tingly, yummy feeling.
I think, too, like, one of the like common themes I've seen during these interviews is that like pleasure is like clarifying in many ways. So like the world is saying it's bad to be intersex, it's bad to be bi, it's bad to be pan, all these things. And you're like, no, it literally like feels good in my body.
Exactly. And I said, how can something that feels so good be evil and bad?
Yeah.
It just didn't make sense to me. And so I think my response to the exorcism was that it was kind of this almost paradoxical feeling that here's the church saying I've got evil spirits and I'm going to kind of turn it around through masturbation and celebrate the things they are calling evil as sacred.
You're in your late 60s now. Is masturbation still an important part of your life?
Oh, yeah. Every morning I do my erotic affirmations.
Can I ask what that looks like?
Yeah. Basically, what I do is I've recorded my affirmations. It's like, you know how we've got negative or positive mind talk, the things we tell ourselves? Well, when I came out of high school, mine was so negative. It was like, I thought, you know, I'd been told all my life, don't even think about college. You're a failure. You can never do anything right. And I used to tell myself those things. And so I started turning those statements into true statements. And so I recorded all these affirmations on my phone. So in the morning, I get up, I pee and brush teeth, and then I come back to bed and I start raising erotic energy. I touch my whole body and feel those tingly feelings and get very hard and erect. And when I really get into that headspace of being fully aroused, I hit play on my phone and it plays out all my affirmations. I've got about 20 of them. And I think what happens when we become erotically aroused, we become more receptive. The subconscious becomes more receptive. And so it really helped transform my life.
Wow. So like getting yourself aroused and listening to affirmations, is that something that like you somebody told you to do, or is it you discover that for yourself?
I started just with the affirmations. It was much later that I started adding the erotic element. I've been doing the erotic affirmations for about 10 years now.
Wow.
But I've been doing affirmations since my early 20s.
And it was your early 20s when you started to come out too as being both bi and intersex.
I wasn't fully out. I was out to a few close friends. It wasn't until later that I came fully out.
When was that?
Late 80s, early 90s.
Okay, because I was, that makes more sense, because I was wondering, like, this was like the 1970s. It was Texas. It's a conservative place. No one would have blamed you if you'd said, like, let me not make this public right now, you know?
Well, partly it was illegal to cross-dress in Texas when I was growing up. If I'd gotten caught wearing a dress, I would have been put in jail. Wasn't until I forget which case it was that it got thrown out.
When that case was thrown out, did you start like wearing dresses in public like immediately?
I had a guy I was dating, and he was into doing drag shows, so I started doing drag shows with him. And he got one of those big auto mechanic toolboxes and made it into his makeup kit. He'd paint my face and do my makeup and hair, and then we'd do drag shows.
Did you have a drag name, or did you use Gigi?
I just went by Gigi. I mean, Gigi's not my birth name. I changed my name because I was having a lot of family problems back then. They were attacking me, and one of my sisters was saying she was going to have some ex-cop friends come pay me a visit, and just it got real nasty. So basically I told them that I'm gonna get my name changed, and I took my partner's last name, Wilbur, and got rid of my old name because I didn't want to have anything more to do with the family. And that's when I finally said, okay, I'm out of here.
Yeah. So moving to your experience like BDSM, what? How old were you when you first like discovered, had your first experience?
Oh, goodness. It's when I had one of my first boyfriends, he was into it. And he was the one that was telling me, oh, you've got really negative mind talk. And so he said, you know, we need to do some role play around some of your negative experiences. And basically, he played the role of my father when he was beating me. And for the first time, I had safe words. And that empowered the inner child that had been so wounded. Because as a child, I didn't get safe words.
Wow. And so that like opened something up inside of you.
Yeah. Because my father beat me one time so badly, I was bruised all over my backside. It was really a bad one. I just felt powerless. And it was through BDSM that I re-empowered myself.
And that has lasted through the majority of your life as well.
Yeah.
It wasn't like one or two experiences and, you know, you said, like, okay, thank you, I'm done.
No. Basically, it wasn't one or two experiences that got me in such bad shape coming out of high school. So it took time to process.
Wow.
And I believe the body carries memories that are not conscious or subconscious. And think about it, when an action happens, often our bodies will react before we even think about it. And so bodies carry a type of memory, I think, muscle memory. And it's going, retraining my body to be more open and receptive.
I should specify, too, that you also teach BDSM. You're not just, like, doing it.
Right. Basically, when I was in the community, there was nothing written back then. No training, or very limited. And so I wrote a book called The Dominance Handbook, An Intimate Guide to BDSM. And I interviewed quite a few DOMs before I wrote the book, spent about 2 years researching it, and about another year writing the book. And I put it together because there's so many people that get into it, especially when it started getting more popular with the mainstream. And people were just jumping in, not knowing any of the foundation that I learned through the leather bars.
What were those like foundations you learned?
Oh, things like protocols for safety, how to put together a scene, going over medical histories with people before you play, gaining consent and planning out the scene with your submissive before you just jump in and do it. And so it's just a lot of protocols that you have to go down. And when I do a scene, I've added some protocols that I think really help out, because not only am I interested in physical safety, but psychological safety. And that way I know, okay, it's not that I'm beating someone that's causing this. It's because we're going into forbidden territory and we need to slow down and rethink it and reapproach it.
They sound like healthy things for, like, anyone, like, in or outside of BDSM, even.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of what we do in BDSM are healthy, but in BDSM, they're required, where there's not as much of a detriment if you don't follow them in other areas of life. But in BDSM, it can be very detrimental if you don't follow them.
BDSM does not, this is like the one-on-one question, but it doesn't always entail, like, I mean, I know sex looks like a lot of different things, but like BDSM doesn't always entail like penetration and ejaculation, right?
No, I mean, a lot of people don't do any sex with BDSM. And it depends how you define sex.
Right.
If you bend someone over your lap and spank them on the bottom, you're stimulating their genitals to some degree or another. Or even if you're flogging them, those vibrations are going through the body. And it may not register at a conscious level, but at some level there's some sexual stimulation. Now, it may not be like sexual in the sense of when you have sex and you get aroused, but there's some stimulation going on.
We were talking earlier about like your attraction to like masculine and feminine. But we, correct if I'm wrong, we've like gendered like being dominant or submissive, right? But that's like artificial.
Oh, yeah, totally. I started as a sub because when I first got into BDSM, you weren't, couldn't switch. You had to be one or the other.
Huh.
And I've had many dominant women play with me through the years. And that's been very empowering.
So you're saying even like BDSM, the community has evolved to like understand that people can switch between the two. And that's like relatively new.
Oh, yeah. I mean, relatively, last 10, 15 years, it's become more acceptable. Whereas when I first got into it in the late 70s, early 80s, it was one or the other.
Wow. How has, like, sex changed for you, like, in general, as you've gotten older?
With sex, I think it's pretty much been an even keel. I mean, I don't get off as many times. When I was real young, when I first came of age, it was like, it was all the time. Now it's like once a day. I used to masturbate like 3 to 7 times a day.
Wow.
When I first came of age.
That's a lot of time.
Yeah. Well, I've learned through some of the tantric practices where I can come in under a minute, or I can last hours. And part of it's doing my pubococcygeus muscle exercises. That's your sex muscles. A lot of people call them Kegels, but Kegel didn't come up with that. That comes from tantric practices. And so once you develop, and I do my exercises every day, but as you strengthen your sex muscles, you gain a lot more control over orgasm. You get stronger and better erections. And even for women get erect too. If they practice their Kegels or their PC muscle exercises, then they develop a firmer erections.
I'm so curious too about, like, for people who favor, you know, being submissive or being dominant, is that, I'm thinking about, like, nature versus nurture. Like, how innate are these things? Like, is there a grand reason why we like what we like?
Well, I often think about theater when I think about BDSM. What we're doing in theater or in movies is we're taking our imagination and bringing some reality to it. And so I think throughout our lifetime, we can, well, I've always kind of been drawn to being a switch, but a lot of people are more on the dom side or the sub side. And so I think it's partly personality, partly just what you desire. And sometimes moods can change. Sometimes I'm into watching a sci-fi film, and other times I'm into watching a drama.
Yeah.
I don't think it's so fixed as we make it out to be.
I'm curious too, because I think that we can, like, oversimplify things. And it's like, you know, you, like, somebody has an experience as a kid, and that's why they're, like, prefer to be submissive. And it feels, like, a bit reductive to me.
Yeah, I've never bought into that. I mean, even early on, I liked to dom. It wasn't just my past experience. It felt good to be in control and to take control of somebody. And role play can be so helpful into your regular life, because I know even on jobs, until I started learning how to be a good dom, it was hard for me to be assertive at work. And it taught me how to be assertive, not aggressive.
You know, I know that you're also, like, part of a, like, community, a BDSM community. Do you feel welcome as, like, a bisexual, as an intersex person, as, like, someone who, like, presents gender nonconforming? Were you welcome in all these groups and felt safe?
Some more than others. And even in the gay community, there was a lot of prejudice against bisexuals. I knew a lot of gay guys that said, oh, I'd never date a bisexual. They might leave me for a woman. And I said, well, they might leave you for another man, too. You're not very good at dating. And I can tell you, I had a lot of gay guys say, oh, you just need to make up your mind and get off the fence. And I said, I'm bisexual. I like sucking cock. I like eating pussy. They both or turn on to me. That's not going to change.
You know, you mentioned earlier about the cross-dressing laws that were in Texas when you were growing up.
Yeah.
Lately in Texas, there's been like a very big focus, like cracking down on like trans kids, on drag.
Oh, no, it's horrible.
Yeah, it's a lot of scary policies. Have you seen or felt a change with all like the new laws that are passed or trying to be passed?
I think the change I feel is from trans friends that are just really scared of it. But I've also, me and my partner have even sat down and talked about if things get too bad, we may need to move to another state.
Do you have a line that like if X happens, you'll move?
I think if things go back, if the laws get changed here to where I couldn't dress the way I wanted or be the way I wanted or have sex with who I wanted, it would be time to go.
Do you think we're close to that, or do you still feel like comfortable enough?
I think that a lot of the conservatives in Texas have gained power, but there's also a lot of liberal people in Texas. And I think the more the conservatives try to push this stuff through, it's going to kind of waken up and get the liberal side more active, is my hope.
Yeah.
And maybe it's wishful thinking, but I think that as they try to push this stuff through, I think a lot of the liberals are going to say, hey, wait, enough's enough. You've gone too far with this.
I mean, even like Texas politics aside, like, do you have like things you're worried about as you like continue to age and get older?
Not as much. I used to be much more active in the pagan community, the gay communities, and the trans community. And now I'm pretty much creating sex training videos and doing a lot of stuff at home. I think since COVID, I'm stayed a little more isolated socially, except on the internet, just for health reasons. I did get COVID, not last summer, but the summer before that. And I didn't know if I was going to make it through. It was bad. And so having survived it, I'm a little more cautious. When I go out, I still wear a mask, even though most people don't. So I'm a little more isolated than I used to be.
You have a partner, though, so you're not entirely isolated, though, at home, right?
Oh, no. I've got two partners. I've got a boyfriend and my long-term female partner. Both, we all live together.
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a wonderful place to leave it at. So thank you for spending so much time.
Oh, you bet.
And that is our show for today. Next week, we will be back with a very gay, very famous former U.S. congressman. So that's next Tuesday. I am very excited for you to hear that one. And in the meantime, if you enjoy our podcast, please help us spread the word about it. Doing things like leaving a comment on Apple Podcasts, texting your friends, posting about us on social media, posting about us on social media twice, all those things really do make a huge difference when it comes to helping our show continue to grow. So thank you so much to everyone who's done that. And then also I should say that we are an independent, fully listener-supported show, and we could not continue without your support. So if you want to support us, if you're able to, please come and check out our Substack. That is the best way to help ensure that we can continue making these episodes for hopefully years to come. There is a link in our show notes to our Substack. Thank you so much to everyone who has joined us there. All right, I'm Jeffrey Masters. I'll see you next Tuesday.